for those that don't know exactly who you are, can you tell them about really who you are and what it is you do?
Well, I've been a pastor of a Bible church for about 30 years. We started in Tulsa, and just teaching the word. And there were several of the saints that in the assembly had some very serious problems that they were not able to resolve, and they came to me for some counseling ministry in the mid-80s, and we had no idea what we were getting into. But as we worked and with them, we found out that a number of the saints here had an occult background, and began to work doing the counseling with some of them, and some of them were able to resolve who were not dissociative, that is, they didn't have any complex dissociative issues. But it wasn't until the early 90s that I discovered the what is now called dissociative identity disorder. It's was used to be called multiple personality disorder, which is the result of chronic childhood trauma. And in the case of the saints here, they were very carefully selected by their European families for trauma-based mind control, all for the purpose of structuring their internal world, if you will, for specifically to bring in the Antichrist. And so it was kind of a shock for me. I had no idea that there could be such a hidden and clandestine conspiracy in the church. You know, I mean, these people had no knowledge that this stuff was there. And so we started on a journey of unraveling this early 90s, and we've been at it ever since. And so where we are today would probably involve, you probably would want to brief me a little bit first to see if your audience would be ready to listen to some of these things, because it's quite amazing in terms of where we are in history, and the Lord has just led us. How do you want me to address you? Is it Minister Fortson? Is that how do I address you?
It really doesn't matter to me. I'm not, I mean, whatever makes you feel comfortable, I'm good with.
Okay. Well, I think you signed it Minister Forson, but, oh, Dante, is that your first name? Dante?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, I'll just address you as Dante, but, you know, our whole, focus has been just to follow the Lord and to seek to become a church that would be more Philadelphian, if you will. In Revelation chapter 3, there's a difference between Laodicea and that which is Philadelphia. And so in our pursuit of the Lord, we just we found out one of the things, I guess I could back up. Back in the 70s, when I was studying the word in the Greek language, when I got to Ephesians chapter 4 in the Greek text, there's a phrase there, until we the ascended Christ gave gifts to men, to the church. He gave apostles, prophets, pastors, or evangelists, pastors, and teachers for the equipping of the saints, so the saints to do the work of the ministry. And then it says, until we all arrive at the goal, unto the unity of faith, unto the full knowledge of the Son of God, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness, unto a perfect man. And I was just stopped in my tracks, Dante. I looked at that and I said, until we all, plural, attain to a perfect man in the singular. And I said, oh, my Lord. I said, this is a corporate thing. And I was just stunned by it. And so I went through the entire Greek text in Ephesians and looked at every word that was there of any kind of theological significance and looked it up in Kittle and read and began to, you know, have my horizons expanded, and spiritually, I begin to ask the Lord. I said, what is it going to take for you to consummate this age? I mean, the goal is that the church would come to the measure of the stature of fullness of Christ. So what is it? I said, Lord, what is standing in the way? And I had no idea that when I asked that question, that he would bring to me people that were so structured in terms of trauma-based mind control. It was actually developed by Dr. Josef Mengele in Nazi Germany, and that some of these people were they're in our church, and of course they didn't know that they had all this in their head because of the amnesia, But all of this came in the context of seeking God's purpose, and God began to show us that there were some very serious strongholds in the body of Christ, not only in our assembly, but I began to travel all across the country and work with people who were struggling with these same kinds of difficulties and helping other churches that didn't know what to do. And so this is where we are today. We're at a place where God has opened up to us many things and many avenues of ministry of helping those who are coming out of trauma-based mind control and those kinds of things. So perhaps that's enough, maybe, intro, and you can just pick up where you want to there, Dante.
Okay. I have a whole lot of questions, so I'm trying to figure out exactly where we can really ease into this subject now. Let's start with the Genesis Project.
Okay.
What is the Genesis Project, and how did you first come into contact with this?
Well, first of all, if people are familiar with the Genesis 6 passage, we know from 2 Peter chapter 2, 4 and Jude 6 that the reference there to those angels that sinned in Genesis 6 are a particular group of angels that the Bnei HaElohim, and that's only used in the Hebrew, by the way, for angelic beings. It's used three times in Job and, of course, twice there in Genesis, where a group of angels, according to Enoch, that came down and cohabited with women and produced a hybrid offspring called Nephilim. So, you know, that's the Genesis account. And then, of course, there's a more limited incursion we see when the children of Israel were to go in and occupy the land of Canaan. We see in Numbers 13, verse 33, that the Nephilim were also in the land of Canaan to thwart the children of Israel from occupying the land. And so we see historically and biblically that there was this phenomenon of hybrids on the earth. And just a little context, about 20 or 30 years ago, I picked up a book titled Earth's Earliest Ages. It was written by George Hawkins Pember, G.H. Pember. The book was released in 1876. It's called Earth's Earliest Ages. And in there, he said at the end, and I don't have the book here with me, but I could quote it if I had it up here. I could read the passages. But at the end of his book, he said that just prior to the return of the Son of Man, there would be a third and final eruption of Nephilim upon the earth as a part of the preparation for the return of the Son of Man. And as a biblical scholar, Dante, this was in 1876, so it's almost like a prophetic kind of thing. So I just filed that away, and I didn't think too much of it. I had no problem with the biblical framework, but I had no idea that some of the people I'd be working with would actually reported that the same event occurring in our generation, that is the conceiving and giving birth to hybrids in our generation. And I believe them, but I just, my goal was to help them deal with the trauma of all this. But the Genesis Project came from working with a young girl from Canada we have here with us. As we began to work through her DID structure, that is her internal dissociative world, it gradually unfolded in about a year of work with her that she was one of the first non-bloodline who reported conceiving, giving birth to these hybrid offspring. And it is, you know, to the listener, this probably just sounds like X-Files. It's just, you know, kind of off the scale. But there are some actually unbelievers that have done tremendous research in this area, Dante. There's a man by the name of Dr. David Jacobs, who has been working in this area for over 40 years. And he's not even professing Christian. He has carefully documented that there is a hybrid breeding program that's global, and it's very ominous. And he's documented that. And then, of course, when it comes to the whole UFO phenomenon, there's been a number of scholars that have documented that the UFO phenomenon, these are not, you know, extraterrestrials from outer space. These are terrestrial-based vehicles that are, according to Dr. Joseph Farrell, who is a Cambridge PhD graduate, his whole research has pointed to the fact that that Nazi Germany, when they lost the war, they went underground, and as they and they took their technology with them in Dodge, Argentina primarily, and they, you know, this Fourth Reich or the New World Order, as we often call it. I mean, there's real hardware out there with actual hybrids flying these things. And this is what Dr. Lynn Marzulli, and who, you know, I've been in touch with very regularly. I've been, in fact, I was on his program here last March. He concurs with me that, or I would concur with him, maybe I'd put it that way, that the great deception that is coming, that Paul mentions in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, the great falling away, rather, the apostasia, most likely will be this anticipated disclosure event that is coming when the so-called rescuers of mankind will come as aliens. And it's a big, it'll just be a big satanic deception to lead people into that which will be the part of the great deception Paul talks about in 2 Thessalonians. So the Genesis Project is that. It's part of the last days, you know, satanic Luciferian endgame, if you will, to infiltrate the human race, just like in the days of Noah, as Jesus said, as it was in the days of Noah, so will be the return of the Son of Man, to so infiltrate the human race with these hybrid entities that it'll actually make up the quintessential, the avant-garde of the armies of Antichrist in the end. And so Satan is all out. I mean, in the Genesis Project, the difference between what's going on today, Dante, and what happened in Genesis 6 is that Satan himself is reportedly the actual, the one who is producing the offspring. So this is happening, and I refer to the works of Lynn Marzulli, Dr. I.D.E. Thomas, The Omega Conspiracy, Satan's Last Attack on the Kingdom of God. I.D.E. Thomas is probably one of the most his book, The Omega Conspiracy, is one of the most groundbreaking books that was released, I think, in the latter 80s. And I would say Tom Horn's book, Nephilim Stargates, is a real good, it was released in 2007, would really bring people up to speed as to where all this is in terms of biotechnology and transhumanism and these kinds of things. So, yeah, that's just kind of in a nutshell. I don't know how else to frame it, but go ahead, Dante. I don't know if that answered your question or not.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Now, one of the things you mentioned was this being the third incursion, I believe it was.
Yes.
Now, I've been doing some very in-depth research of my own, and I've talked to many people about how these beings, or these angels, these fallen angels from Genesis 6, who we now believe are posing as extraterrestrials, how they, you know, everything links together with the different myths throughout history. And what I do find interesting is that all throughout history, we seem to have these beings that are kidnapping people and producing hybrids. Now, do you believe that we've only had three incursions, or do you believe it's possible that this has been an ongoing phenomenon all throughout human history?
No, I believe that with the defeat of the Canaanites, I say the defeat of the Canaanites, with the Old Testament, I don't know that the bloodlines completely died out, but there became, you know, first, second generation offspring, like you have the Anakim, you have the Emim, you have the Zumim, the Zamzumim, you know, these different hybrids that are mentioned in the Old Testament. And I think as they degenerated, that they died out. And so that there were not like a first generation like we see in Genesis 6. It's the reports that I have anecdotally and what I believe is in my understanding that in Nazi Germany, if you study the Fourth Reich, it was a totally an occult regime. I mean, there's a lot of good documentation on it. Just look up Google in the occult history of Nazi Germany, and people can watch documentaries on this. But Dr. Josef Mengele, who's programmed a number of the people that I've worked with, he was here in the United States, protected under by our government under Operation Paperclip. Dr. Yossi Mengele developed techniques of trauma-based mind control, but the goal through eugenics was to create a super race of God-men. And so that is the Aryans as the fourth root race, according to Madame Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, who was a Russian mystic, influenced a lot of the ideology of Nazi Germany, along with Litz and Lanz and some of these other people. And so their goal was to create an Aryan species of Godman. Well, that program, as you move forward into history, as collaborating, just like in Genesis 6, in order to get technology, and they got a lot of advanced technology. They had to, you know, surrender the women the same way they did in Genesis 6. And so what we have is a Nazi Germany. I mean, they killed over 6 million Jews. That was like a massive sacrifice that I believe that opened a portal. That portal was opened historically at about the same time the Nation of Israel became a nation in 1948. And so with the Nation of Israel becoming a nation, that started the prophetic clock for the last generation. Well, at the same time, this whole Genesis project, as far as I can see, that was when it was actually initiated in terms of the birthing of these Nephilim women. And so this generation that we're in now, starting with 1948, is the generation that is represents the third and final incursion of the, as it was in the days of Noah. The difference is there were giants then. The goal now is in all the reports that I have, is that the Nephilim entities or the hybrid entities that are here now, they look like human beings. They do not look. There may be some mutations that are more of the reptilian or the grays, but the goal is to create a Superman, so that they can be interdispersed in society. And the reports are they're in our society now, in order to create a base for the final Armageddon campaign. So I believe it's happening now, and it's the outgrowth of what began in Nazi Germany as the Third Reich. And Jim Mars has written a book on the Fourth Reich, and if anyone has read Joseph Farrell's books, The Nazi International, he wrote one of his most recent books is called Roswell and the Nazi Connection. He connects all this UFO phenomenon in terms of the physical hardware to an extension of what began in Nazi Germany. Now, I would say this, and I've discussed this with Lynn Marzulli. When we talk about UFO phenomenon and the so-called ETs, aliens, it's really a misnomer. You're going to have two kinds of phenomena. You're going to have actual fallen angels who are able to masquerade as anything. They can masquerade as your ancestors. They can masquerade as spaceships. They have the ability to do this because they have spiritual bodies. And also as ETs. So you have that whole phenomenon. But then you also have mixed into this or integrated into this actual hardware and actual entities flying the hardware. So you put this all together and you have a coming setup when that you just type in disclosure, you know, on Google and just see what some of the things out there. In fact, Dr. Tom Horn on his website, he's got an extensive list of scholars and works on this on the coming disclosure, and so I think, you know, when people read like Tom Horn's book, Dante, they a lot of things he says in there, it's like he's anticipating it. The science is there, the biology is there, and he even says maybe it's already here. The reports that I have and the work, and I've been working with survivors for about 25 years now. They're already here. It's already happening. And the point is, it's far later than we could ever imagine. I mean, we really are at the end of this dispensation. And I would just say, you know, the church in the West is basically asleep. you know, I was just a, this a conversation I had with Lynn Marzulli the other day. There's not one church that's invited him to come and speak. I mean, he's got a tremendous presentation. He's written the three books on Nephilim trilogy, published by Zonovan. Is one of his most recent books is Prophecy, Politics, and the Supernatural. I mean, there's no churches even inviting him in, and that just it tells us, you know, the state of the church generally is asleep to the fact that our whole society has been infiltrated. Russ Dizdar just released his book, The Black Awakening, and clearly documents that, and I've seen it too, the church is infiltrated with highly programmed multiples that are masquerading with a facade, a Christian facade. So, you know, it's probably a mind blower for a lot of people to hear this, Donnie, but, you know, this is the world that I live in. I mean, I live and breathe for 25 years, and there are others out there, you know, that I'm not alone in this. I mean, you know, if you go to the Byte Show, you can listen to Dr. Preston Bailey. He's got his PhD in counseling ministry, and he you know, we just had a two-hour interview about 2 weeks ago, and he fully concurs that he's found the same things I found in terms of working with survivors of trauma-based mind control.
Yeah, I agree with you. When we talk about the Nephilim not being giants anymore, and I actually came to that conclusion just before I found the interview you did that I posted on my site. I'd actually been doing, again, some research into the different mythologies around the world, and I wrote down a comparison chart, and I started to compare the entities. And one of the entities that interested me the most were the fairies. You kind of get these legends of fairies around the close of the Middle Ages. And it seems almost like the Genesis 6 account, except for what changes is they start trying to slip in these what are called changelings that look almost human, but they're trying to get them to pass for human. And I guess they weren't quite there yet, and people weren't accepting these as human. And I thought that was strange, and it seemed to me that it might play into the whole genetic manipulation process and getting them to walk among us as humans, because that was the entire agenda of fairies, to create some kind of hybrid that could walk among men and not be recognized. And that was part of the reason that I asked you if you thought that, you know, this thing had been occurring throughout history. Now we get to these when we talk about these modern Nephilim, the women you came in contact with, how did you first come to learn of these women, and did they contact you, or did you seek them out and contact them?
No, I never sought any of this out. In fact, the most of the women that, you know, that I worked with, they had various issues. They had trauma based mind control. They had severe depression, and they didn't even know a lot of this was there. So I began to work with them as those who have a history of trauma. They were highly structured SRA, or satanic ritual abuse, with the attendant dissociative identity disorder. So as I began to work with them and their multiplicity, and just to help them come out of this horrific history, at the deepest level of their programming, it was hidden. The fact that they had this experience, they had been prepped, you know, from conception and birth, and then at age 13 to conceive and give birth to these entities. And it was very hidden, and there was a tremendous amount of denial. I mean, they just did not want to look at it, and yet in order to resolve the trauma, they had to go there. So this were some of the ladies in the assembly that I was working with. And then people would come from out of town for counseling, and not all the women, but some of the women reported the same thing. And then the most recent one that I mentioned, that I interviewed, Jennifer Diane, she's the youngest one that is non-bloodline. And when I first heard, when she contacted me, because we have a pastor friend who, this is their niece, and she was raised in a Christian church. And when this girl contacted me through this, you know, pastor friend, says she's got all these different problems. She's suicidal. We don't know what's wrong with her. She's raised in a Christian home. Would I see her? And I said I would. So I went down to New Jersey to interview her. And after about an hour of interview, she was switching into different personality states. And I thought, my gosh, if she, you know, she's had some serious damage done to her, or she wouldn't be switching like this. And so as I began to work with her, initially it looked like she was just abused in a mainline evangelical church by the pastor. But as we begin to burrow down in her DID system, we see that the British monarchy were involved. The Duke there, and he was financing some of this programming. And I thought, well, I've been here before, because you know he's been a major nemesis in my life. So I thought, well, if he's involved, we're into something big. And so as we begin to burrow down into her defenses and unravel this, all the horror, she became the first in my experience of a non-bloodline that was actually programmed and structured to conceive and give birth to a Nephilim. But no, I've never sought any of this out. I mean, these people just came to me with different issues and problems, and this is their story. I've never said, well, are you a Nephilim mother? Or, you know, that's improper, you know, interrogation. It has to be their story. And one of the things we do, and we pray, I mean, we command in the name of Jesus Christ that anything in any of our sessions, that anything that would be intruding from the satanic kingdom would be cut off. We call upon the name of the Lord to reveal truth. You know, Daniel 2:22, God reveals profound and hidden things. We know that Proverbs chapter 20, verse 27, that the spirit of man, or the Hebrew, the neshama of man, is the lamp of the Lord, searching all the innermost parts of man's being. And so as a counselor, I'm able to discern the difference between that which is, you know, the function of the human spirit and God operating versus what some people would call screen memories. This is the real deal. That's all I can say. I mean, if someone could just sit and watch a counseling session and see the horrific ab reactions and see what these people go through, it's shocking to see the amount of trauma. And yet, these people are courageous. I mean, you know, it may sound kind of novel, you know, on the website it says Nephilim mothers. You know, these are first of all saints, Dante. I mean, they love the Lord, they walk with the Lord, and they've had this happen to them. They didn't ask to have this happen to them. And their humanity was stolen. They were actually basically kidnapped by the adversary to carry out this end time program. And I've written an article, it's called Why SRA and the Church, and I did a message on that on the Byte Show. But God is allowing the adversary out in a very special way, so that when it's all said and done, it's going to be over. I mean, when Satan has done his worst, and God brings this whole thing to a conclusion, God will be fully justified in throwing that creature into the lake of fire, because what he has done to people in this generation is absolutely off the scale. So it's the closing act, the way I see it.
Now, Mr. Rick, I have a question. When you say the first non-bloodline, what exactly do you mean by that?
Well, in my experience, and of course collaborating with other counselors who work in this particular field of ministry, there are 13 top Illuminist families. Mainly they're European monarchy. There's a book written, it's called The Last Descendant of Aeneas by Dr. Marie Tanner, the Mythic Emperor, etc. I forget the whole title, but it's called The Last Descendant of Aeneas. I won't go into all of it, but basically it says this, that if you go back to the Merovingian bloodline and then converging with Charlemagne, from Charlemagne forward, all the European kings, in order to have the right to bring forth the final Roman Emperor, that's what they refer to. We know that to be the Antichrist, but they had to establish certain genealogical purity. It's the same idea of Nazi Germany. So beginning from Charlemagne forward, the kings would intermarry and they would produce royal offspring. If you go into Wikipedia and just type in royal intermarriage, and there's a great article there on that. But the bloodlines, the confluence of bloodlines, the goal was to produce a final Roman emperor, and so coming up to World War II, you have two primary bloodlines, the Romanovs on the Russian side, and then the deepest and one of the most hidden Germanic bloodlines that qualified to bring forth the final Roman emperor, whom we know as the Antichrist, was the Oldenburg. You can type in Oldenburg, and it's one of the oldest of the Germanic bloodlines. Well, what they wanted to do is out of these bloodlines is to create a top 13. So a new bloodline came into being called Collins. In fact, I think under the top 13 Luminous families, there's been some writing on the Collins, but that's the Collins, what I understand it, is the Bilderberg Project. And these top 13 bloodlines are the bloodlines that qualify to bring an Antichrist, but these bloodlines are also those that are selected to be the Nephilim mothers, okay, because they have the right bloodline. And so in all my work with those that have a history of these bloodlines, these royal bloodlines from Europe, that have conceived and give birth to a Nephilim, had to come from these specific bloodlines, okay? But as of 2002, the Genesis Project, this girl was born in 1989. They didn't know if it was going to work, and there was a lot of money put into it. In 2002, she did conceive and give birth to the first Nephilim, and she was taken all over the world. I mean, it was a huge project of success, and so she represents the first non-bloodline. So this, from 2002, this is what we have in Genesis 6:2. When the watchers came down, they took women of the sons of daughters, as many as they chose. The women in Genesis 6, they were not bloodline. They were just the daughters of Adam. So as of 2002, according to what I'm working with here, it appears that the days of Noah, at least unless somebody else comes up with another an earlier example, begins the days of Noah, because before that it was only bloodline. Now the adversary has access to all the daughters of men, just like the days of Noah. So I hope I'm not too complicated in all this, but I sometimes people chastise me. I don't know how to give a short answer, I guess, but I try to answer
it. It makes total sense.
Okay.
It makes total sense to me, yeah.
So as of 2002, which is amazing, I remember discussing this with Lynn Marzulli, that if that's the case, then 2002 actually began the time of the days of Noah. With the birth of Israel in 1948, that's the beginning of the last generation. This generation will not pass away until all these things come are fulfilled. And the issue is not how long is a generation, but the issue is will not pass away. But with 2002, now we're in that which represents the days of Noah. And it's totally amazing that we could even, that we can even know. I mean, Jesus, we know that we can't know the day or the hour. But, Matthew 16, and, Jesus said you should be able to discern the season. We should know that we're in the last generation. So I have no doubt that we are in the last generation, even though we don't know the exact day or the hour.
Do you think these so-called indigo children could have been Nephilim children?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question. Could you repeat that?
I said these indigo children that they were talking about not too long ago. These kids with larger than normal eyes and had this amazing brain capacity. They were called indigo children. I was wondering, could they be young Nephilim?
I can't answer that because I've never worked with anyone with that particular syndrome, so I'm really not qualified to answer that. So I don't know.
All right. One thing we mentioned earlier was the bloodlines or the royal lines, and maybe I don't know if it was my lack of information at the time, but I always assumed that Nephilim could be created with, any woman, whether she was bloodline or not. And that these beings became royal because of their parentage, the powers that were associated with them. And one thing, when I was listening to your interview, you mentioned a lady, I can't recall her name, the one that was outside of the bloodlines. How many of these women were outside of the bloodlines that were reported to have having given birth to modern day Nephilim.
In my experience, and those that I've the other counselors I work with, until this young woman, the only women that had reported conceiving, giving birth to these hybrids were descendants of some royal bloodline and primarily European. So, to my knowledge, this is the first one. This one that is non-blood is the first one that I know of. And she reported. Here's what she told me. She said they spent, you know, it was financed by the royal monarchy, this whole project. In fact, the Nazi, I won't mention his name, but the particular doctor that Nazi doctor, he's not Nazi doctor, but he was trained by Josef Mengele. He won the contract or the bid to do this because there were others competing for this, and of course it was millions of dollars that went into this. To see if they could, the whole goal was to bring the technology back the way it was in Genesis. That's why it's called the Genesis Project, because it was limited to bloodline. But now, with the Genesis Project being a success as of 2002, it is now just like the days of Noah. And it would appear to me, and I have, as I think about it, is that when the judgment came and those angels were incarcerated, God has not—he did not allow this particular advance until a certain time in history, and it's kind of contemporaneous with where we are with Israel. Look at Israel's been back in the land for what at that time is 55 years. So it's kind of a confluence of events. We're coming at the end of that generation that will not pass away until all these things will be fulfilled. We have the third and final incursion of Nephilim, as was predicted by George G.H. Pember in 1776 and others, I.D.E. Thomas. So we have a number of things that are happening, and now it's like you said, Dante, what is now reported from, you just think about this, from 2002 on, these entities have access to women just like Genesis 6. I mean, that's the report that I have.
All right. I definitely find this to be a very interesting topic, because it's not too many, you know, people that really have an inside knowledge on, you know, what's reported as far as these modern-day Nephilims happening. Now, we mentioned about the breeding program. Now, I kind of wanted to segue into this, but I'm not sure, so I'll just go ahead and come right out and ask it. You mentioned the age of 13 in several of your interviews. Why is the age of 13 so important? And what happens, I guess you say, up until the age of 13?
Well, with the bloodline, at conception, there are major conception events, and now, kind of reverse engineering, we know that this took place on Mount Hermon. The actual conception, and then when they're at age 13 is kind of a mystical number. It's an occultic thing that it's one of the rites of passage. When a person reaches 13, it's like bar mitzvah, or you know, it's the time they reach their full pinnacle of their training. So when a person is being groomed for this and coming out of royal bloodline, there's a 13-year grooming and preparation. So when they reach age 13, this is when major sealing rituals come into place, where the conception event occurs. They give birth. It's just kind of a magical number, 13.
Yeah, I find that to be very interesting. The number 13 pops up a lot in different pagan practices and different cultures. Is there any significance to that number, or is it just the number they choose, or is it possible? Have any women reported giving birth to these Nephilim at later ages or earlier ages?
Not earlier, but later, yes. I mean, there are those that have had succeeding births after age 13, yes. I think to answer that, it's, you know, the disciples that were, you know, they're the 12 disciples, and of course Jesus is the 13th, and he is the master. Well, Satan can't come up with anything original. He has to, you know, he imitates. And so if you look at the council, there's the Council of Twelve. I mean, if you go to Himmler's his castle, I forgot the name of it there, but his you know, that triangle-shaped castle, there were 12 seats of the top heads of the SS, and he sat in the 13th position. The reports that I have that when at these top council meetings in the New World Order, you have the Council of 300, but at the inner circle there's the Council of 13. And before, that is before the early 70s, there were 12 men. These represent the kings of the earth, while Satan sat in the 13th seat. They call him Lucifer. They don't call him Satan. So it's kind of a sacred number. If you go to the Greek pantheon in Greece, you have the Olympiads. You have the 12 Olympiads, and Zeus, which is the chief god of the Greek pantheon, he was in the 13th seat. In the Roman pantheon, it's the same thing, only it was called Jupiter. So it's kind of a, you know, it has, I think it's Satan's way to try to represent, you know, he's the master, and then he has 12 top key disciples who are the heads of the New World Order. Now we know from the reports that there's been a coup d'etat, and instead of human heads, they're actually Nephilim entities that are now occupying those seats.
That is interesting. Amazing.
All right, brother. Do you have a question, brother BJ, or you want me to keep going? I have a ton of them.
It made me think about the show we did with Mr. Rick just said. It made me think about what King Wells said when he said that he thinks that with the New World Order they actually will be the Nephilim sitting in those seats. The kings would be Nephilim.
Yeah,
I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah. I've talked with you're talking about Jim Wilhelmsen.
No, I was just going to reference him when you talked about the actual hardware, because he was the first one that actually I saw speak about that.
Yeah.
That the hardware that they have is, you know, and that they made a deal with the Nazis back in during that time. So.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredibly interesting.
Yeah, I think, you know, just to kind of pick up on what you said there, you know, I read Russ Dizdar's book, which is really tremendous. I think everybody should read it. It's called The Black Awakening. Russ really, I mean, he acknowledges the things that we talked about in terms of the Nazi-Germany connection. He spends quite a bit of time on just discussing what's called the super soldier. These super soldiers are really trauma-based programmed human beings. So you put that in there, what Russ has done. Then you add to this, who are going to be the generals? The generals in you know, or the leaders of these super soldiers, which are programmed human beings, I believe are going to be Nephilim hybrids. So in this end time army, it's going to be a horrendous thing, and they are going to attempt to thwart the coming of Jesus Christ. Revelation 19:19. It says they're going to wage war against God. And I like what Russ does in his book. You know, let's connect the dots. How did this vast army that's going to be fighting God, you know, thwarting Jesus Christ in Revelation 19:19, how did that army get here? And so that's important. But I think what I've seen in my work and with discussion with other people is that mixed in that you have these Nephilim entities. But now think about it from Satan's standpoint. He, in order to create a Superman, he has to have a certain resource pool. The ultimate goal is to create the Superman that we know as Antichrist. I've absolutely convinced that both the Antichrist and the false prophet are Nephilim hybrids. And the reason why I believe this is that if you look at the passage in Revelation 19 verse 20, when Jesus Christ returns, it says that the beast and the false prophet are both seized and thrown alive into the lake of fire. Now, we got to think about this. If they were human beings, they would have to wait till the end of the millennium. They would be thrown into Hades. They wouldn't go to the lake of fire. They would go into Hades like all the rest of unbelieving mankind and await for judgment. Hades is not a final place of judgment. It's just it's a holding place, and the lake of fire is the final place. But before unbelieving mankind are actually cast in the lake of fire at the end of the millennial reign of Christ, they have to stand before the great white throne judgment. And so when you look at the doctrine of the just and the unjust, we see that all unbelievers, without exception, if they belong to mankind, will stand before God at the great white throne judgment. However, the beast and the false prophet do not. Why? I believe as a species, they were already judged in Genesis 6. And so they are cast into the lake of fire. Now, isn't it interesting? They're thrown into the lake of fire when Jesus Christ returns at the beginning of the millennium. At the end of the millennium, after the final revolt, the Gog Magog revolt at the end of Revelation, it says in Revelation 12:10 that Satan, who deceived mankind, he was thrown into the lake of fire where the beast and the false prophet are. So we see that in Satan doesn't appear before the great white throne judgment. So we see that the false prophet, the Antichrist, and Satan are in the same category in terms of judgment. They're all three are thrown into the lake of fire prior to the great white throne judgment. So that indicates to me that the beast and the false prophet are hybrid entities. They're a category that's already been judged. But the question is, how many others have infiltrated the human race as complements and a part of that great Armageddon army at the end?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's very interesting. When we talk about this Armageddon army, one of the things that I find the most interesting about this army of Armageddon is in Revelation, where these spirits like frogs proceed out of the mouth of the dragon. Do you find that to be a direct reference to what may be going on with the modern day Nephilim, or something different?
Well, I think in that passage, it specifically is just describing. When you look at the whole context, there's lots of blood and there's lots of judgment. These are in the midst of the vile judgments. And we see that because of the bloodletting, that these spirits are released, the spirit of the false prophet, the spirit of the Antichrist, and the spirit of the dragon or Satan are released. And they go forth. It says very specifically, these spirits, these are not Nephilim. These are fallen angels. These are demonic entities. They go forth to gather the kings together for the great war of God the Almighty. And this, if you read on the context there, they gather in a place called Armageddon. So this is just the releasing of powers as a part of the context of the great and terrible day of the Lord.
Yeah, these beings are very interesting, and I believe that I personally believe that we're getting very close to the time as you speak of. We actually have a caller calling in. I want to cut to that caller and let the caller ask a question. Caller, you're live on the air. Can you hear us?
Yes.
How are you doing tonight?
I am doing great. Great show. Great guest.
Thank you very much. Do you have a question from the three?
Yes, I do. Have they taken all of these women to Mount Hermon, or just the last one that was a non-bloodline girl?
Actually, the non-bloodline girl was taken there afterwards because her conception, she was born in a Christian family, so they had a different plan for her. But in all all the bloodline women that have conceived and given birth to Nephilim, the conception ritual for them that took place on Mount Hermon, because Mount Hermon, what I believe is that portal was closed. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until that the massive sacrifice of 6 million Jews was a bloodletting that actually reopened that portal, because Mount Hermon is where the original watchers came down in Genesis 6. That's where they came down. And
yep.
So that was reopened again as a result of that massive blood ritual that occurred in Nazi mm-hmm. Germany. And so they are taken there where that portal is open, and there's a conception event. In other words, they are actually conceived there And there are orchestrated rituals all over the world where just tens of thousands of sacrifices are synchronized so that it's timed at the ritual event. Then what has been reported is that Satan actually installs what is called a triple helix, and he interfaces with the human DNA, that which the women have the capacity at age 13 to conceive and give birth to Nephilim, because it's not normal. It's contrary to nature. So Satan has a way to engineer this. It's a biological engineering, and he comes in. And I don't know that it's seen, but it's an overlay, it's an interface of what the girls have described as a triple helix. And,
okay.
and when part of the healing process is we dismantle that, and God restores these women so they're free of that. But it's a lot of work, and because what the enemy has done is it's just part of his final move. But to answer your question, the conception event with all the women that conceive, give birth to Nephilim, has reportedly been on Mount Hermon.
Okay. Now, what are done? Are the Nephilim babies then taken away from the mothers and brought to some sort of a Nephilim castle or something where they're raised by nannies that have been programmed and trained? Or where do these Nephilim babies go?
They're not kept by the ones that give birth. They are taken
right.
from I don't have any firsthand knowledge, but the reports are some there's underground facilities for this. There are some reported that that they're kept in the second heavens. That is, there's a dimensional
yes.
If we understand physics, there's six dimensions that are unseen to us. And one of in the second heavens is, of course, the space that the not space but the domain between the third heaven and earth. That's one of the conjectures. I don't really know, but they are nurtured. They are they only the gestation period reportedly is only about 4 months, and the growth is very fast. There's supernatural components to their enhancement, and they're brought into a place of prominence and authority very quickly. So a lot of them, from what I've reported, they're already in the infrastructure of the military and government right now.
Yeah, I've heard Russ Dizdar speak, and I also have his book, Black Awakening, and
yeah.
Follow Mr. Marzulli's work and your interviews on The Bite Show, and I just find this subject matter very, very fascinating. So thank you for the information. So the conception event also is an interdimensional conception event of some sort.
Yes. Yeah. It is. It is a. Think about it this way. Satan is referred to as the spirit singular that is now energeia, supernaturally operational among the sons of disobedience. That's Ephesians 6:2. And then we see in Ephesians 6:12, we wrestle not with flesh and blood, that is human beings, but with principalities, with powers, with the world rulers, cosmocrators of this present darkness, the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenlies, epiranois. Heavenlies means dimensions.
Right.
And notice it's spiritual. So when
when we
talk about a conception event, there is a this is. You know, I've had a debate with those out there that say, "Well, where's the proof? Show me the goods. Show me the where's the proof that these entities are out there? If where's the proof that this is even happening?" Well, you could ask all kinds of things that are happening in the spiritual world for scientific empirical truth, and you're not going to find it necessarily, because this kind of an event it's real, but it is spiritual, but it's real. Because whatever the adversary does, it accomplishes his purpose, and that is to bring in that hybrid Antichrist and false prophet, but also to create the generals that I believe will be in charge of the super soldiers in terms of the final end time war against God.
Right. Okay. All right. I just find this really fascinating. I am a abductee from very early childhood memories of beings cloaking in my room as a child. And I've done an interview, a couple interviews on CurseNet and with Linda Gee on Set the Captives Free. And there's some, like, question, you know, I mean, I had an event where three of these beings took me and physically, you know, did something with me. And I mean, it didn't produce a child, but I had, you know, a lot of trauma and things like that in my life. And so Russ Dizdar and what he writes about and these different things, it just really fascinated me with these women that, you know, were brought to this place. And I may have been, you know, there's some stuff in my family history. And I think by accepting the Lord, I escaped what may have been something similar to that. But anyway, thank you very much, Doug, for all your work. And thank you, Dante, for having Doug as a guest. And I appreciate your input.
Yeah, well, blessings to you, brother.
All right.
Well, thank you for calling. We definitely appreciate it. Mr. Riggs, I wanted to ask you, how long do you believe that this current breeding program has been going on?
I believe that Laban's born and was kind of a precursor. They were attempting it then in Nazi Germany. To my knowledge, the very first Nephilim that was born was in 1962. According to the anecdotal testimonies I have, that this has been going on since then. I think prior to that time, that there were some attempts at whatever happened at Roswell, some of these whatever entities were there. There may have been some botched mutations. They were not yet to the place where they are now, but as of 1962, they finally reached the stage of refinement. There are basically three categories, what's been reported, more of the reptilian and then the grays. These are more like the mutations, but the goal has been to create the quintessential, the avant-garde Homo noeticus, that is, to that which would replace Homo sapien, and they're well advanced in that. And Dr. David Jacobs, even though he doesn't profess to be a Christian, he is documented in his works. He's been doing this 40 years, that the hybrid program is well advanced. I should say the hybrid breeding program is well advanced.
Now, when we talk about hybrids, one of the things that comes up a lot is the corruption of all flesh. And recently I started digging into this, that it kind of went into the animals too, and that's where we kind of get these legends of all these hybrid-type animals all throughout history. And recently we have had, in 2009 and 2010, two states pass the Animal-Human Hybrid Prohibition Act. Do you believe that these weird kind of genetic programs are also going to extend into the animal kingdom? Or will this time just be specifically human?
No. In fact, if you read the book of the extra biblical, that the report was that there was not only the offspring of the union between fallen angels and women to produce the hybrid offspring of Nephilim, but there were also the genetic experimentation with animals. There's an interview between Steve Quayle and Dr. Tom Horn. If you go to Steve Quayle's website under Archives, there is a fairly recent interview, I would say within the last month, between Tom Horn and Steve Quayle. And so it addresses all this. It's a 2-hour, actually it's 4 hours total. I think it may be in the first 2 hours. But Tom goes into the documentation with all the websites of the goal of mixing animal and human DNA. And the reason for this is, for example, if you take a leopard or a cat who can see well at night, if you take the DNA and you put that into a man, he wouldn't have to use night seeing vision. So it has you know, there's various ways that they're seeking to extrapolate the DNA from animals to enhance soldiers so that they can have greater strength. And it's interesting, when you look at Joel chapter 2, I think verses 1 through 9, the Hebrew there, and even the English, it's very amazing. This army is highly synchronized, and they can leap over walls. It looks to me, when you read the description of this army, that they're enhanced, and I think that's the whole purpose of the mixing of the animal and human aspect of this, which is a different aspect of the hybrid, is because we have nations and armies that are in competition, and they're being forced in order to compete to devise ways to enhance the soldier.
So I find that to be very.
I would just say that Tom Horn is probably the best one to, and I think Steve Quell, they've done good on. Tom Horn has done a lot of good documentation on this.
Yeah, I find that to be very interesting when we get into transhumanism, parahumans. Have you run into anybody that has actually, I guess you'd say, witnessed any of these hybrids, Nephilim or animal-human hybrids, or anything like that? Have you run into anybody who has actually seen one of these after it has been born, fully grown, walking around in society?
Yeah, well, this girl I'm working with, she said that in the laboratories where she was taken, that she has seen these entities, that they are in existence. There are vast underground complexes. A lot of them are hidden in terms of military, so they're completely, you can't go there because it's classified as military. But she said that she's seen these entities. Not only that, but they're doing a hybrid of insects, so that they would be carriers of different kinds of disease. When we look at all the various plagues in the Book of Revelation, yeah, it's going to be a judgment of God, but it may be that, at least in part, that some of these plagues were engineered by man. Demonic enhancement, I would say.
See, I believe that a lot of the stuff that we're seeing right now is the product of something going on behind the scenes that is much, much bigger than we really realize. One of the things you spoke on earlier is disclosure. Now, I tossed this idea back and forth with lots of our guests. Do you believe that 2012 will somehow play into this disclosure project?
Well, first of all, 2012 is more than just the convergence and the ending of a Mayan calendar. There are many other things at play. For example, the sun is expected to be in a state or a cycle of a solar flare event that could cause a catastrophic failure. There are various issues that are converging historically that make 2012 a time of social unrest and upheaval, not because it's Nostradamus, but it's, if you read Dave Flint's works, he, in terms of astronomical alignment, and we're not talking about astrology now, we're talking about astronomy, there's some very exceptional work that would indicate that there's going to be a convergence of some sorts. So here's a phenomenon, and this is very subjective, but for years, Dante, I would look at the clock and I would see 11:11. And my wife and I, we would talk about this. Why is it when we look at the clock, we look at the VCR, why is it we look at it and we see 11:11? We didn't know this for years. We did not know. And we found out other people were experiencing the same thing. Why this 11:11 on the clock all the time? And we didn't even know for years. Well, now we find out that 11:11 is the actual time. At 11:11, December 21st, Greenwich Mean Time, the Mayan calendar ends. So is that just coincidental? Well, a number of other people have been experiencing this. We experienced it for 10 years before we even knew what 1111 was. And so I'm not saying that that means something's going to happen. I just say if you put all the various phenomena together, including the Mayan calendar, but including the astronomical alignments, and I don't know all the configuration, but it would appear that something major is going to occur. Is it going to be the end of the world like that new movie, the 2012? No, it will not be the end. You know, we know it's not going to be the end because biblical prophecy makes it very clear that the end of the age is not the end of the world. It's the end of the age. And we are at the end of the end of the age. And then, of course, for Israel, the end of the age for them is Daniel's 70th week. There are 7 years. But then when Jesus Christ returns, that's the beginning of the millennial age. But the old age is closed out in terms of judgment and tribulation. So it just may be that with this convergence of things, you know, we're going to see some, you know, world-shaking events occur, and I think they're already in progress myself.
Yeah, I definitely agree that 2012 will not be the end of the world, and the reason I did pose that question about the disclosure is because, as you mentioned, the Mayan calendar, and again, along with the Egyptian, the Zulu, the Maori, all kinds of different tribes all over the world, mentioned some kind of spiritual shift. And many of them also mentioned the return of beings to the planet Earth, which I did find interesting in doing the study on 2012. Now, do you believe that these beings could reveal themselves sometime in the near future? I'd say, you know, even within the coming months, or do you believe that they will play this thing out for a longer period of time? And if so, how long do you think they will take to get the public conditioned to accept these beings as extraterrestrials?
Well, I think we've already been conditioned from more and more, even since 1948. If you look at the various movie, you know, Hollywood is a tremendous propaganda machine. You have two basic categories or themes of extraterrestrial type movies: those that are hostile and threatening the human race, and the others that are benevolent. You know, like the one Knowing. If you see that movie Knowing, that was definitely propaganda. We have a person in there, I forgot the actor. You know, his father is an evangelical preacher. He has the typical biblical worldview, but then for him, his savior are the ETs. They come and they save mankind at the end and rescue them from the coming disaster. So you have two different scenarios. You have the good guy, bad guy, ETs, and I believe that's purposeful. So as we approach the end and disclosure, the disclosure may take on a twofold kind of scenario. We'll have an assault of the bad guys, and that could be a part of the Black Awakening, as Russ has said, which would include, you know, the infusion of these hostile alien hybrids. And then in order to bring peace out of this, the good guys will come. I say good guys. The so-called aliens would be those that would be the ancient gods to come to rescue mankind, take credit for the creation of mankind, and come off as the world saviors. And if the rapture is a part of the event of the removal of the obstruction of the emergence of the New World Order, then the explanation would be right there with the church being removed, and they take the credit. Then we have 1 Thessalonians, which follows the rapture passage in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and chapter 5, when they are saying peace and safety, then sudden destruction will come upon them as a woman in travail. Well, when are they going to say peace and safety? They can't say it while the church is here. The church is an obstruction. Look at Psalm chapter 2, verse 3. Let us cast their cords off from us and their restraints from us. And so the church, you know, the very fact that the church here is restraint. But when the church is removed, then there can be a temporary peace and safety. So, I don't know the time. I personally feel that I will be surprised if we have an election this year. I really do. I mean, I think there are enough events that could occur that could circumvent. I mean, if there is a war in the Middle East, if there's Akhmadinejad has already said that they're going to set off dirty bombs in the United States or some type of weapons. So, you know, we have the fleets over there, and they're posturing themselves in the Middle East right now. If a war breaks out, Akhmadinejad has already promised there's going to be catastrophic events here. We don't know what's going to happen in the Gulf in terms of a possible methane explosion and that creating a horrendous event. But there are a number of things that are happening that could create a scenario where the disclosure would be the opportunity for these entities to come in as our saviors. So we just have to wait and see, because, you know, I'm no prophet. I don't know. But we're certainly living in times that everything's accelerating, it seems to me.
Yeah, I definitely agree. We're coming to that point where everything seems like it's right on the doorstep, like almost to the point where we could look out the window tomorrow and see a scene like Independence Day or the new show V. Now, with that said, do you believe the new show V, which is a remake of the old show, do you believe it has some kind of religious overtones? And the reason I ask that is because it seems that these beings are hypnotized by this woman called Anna. I'm not sure if you're familiar with how familiar you are with the new show. But recently the show has taken a turn, and it started to revolve around the birth of a hybrid between these visitors and the human race. Do you believe the shows like that are Hollywood? I guess you say many people think there's a conspiracy in Hollywood. Do you think those shows are purposely put out by Hollywood to condition us, or do you think this is just purely entertainment?
No. We know that for years that what Joe McCarthy back in the beginning, he was pretty much castigated. But you know, Hollywood, there was communists in Hollywood, and there was all these charges of an agenda going on in Hollywood. So I believe that as a propaganda machine, Hollywood is probably the enemy's number one agent to condition people to have a mindset to be prepared and ready to receive Antichrist. I mean, it's spirits are driven. Remember, Ephesians 2, the spirit that now works in the sons of disobedience. Well, there's nothing any more corrupt than the Hollywood set. I mean, they are corrupt to the core for the most part. I mean, there's a few exceptions, but for the most part, they're just, you know, their whole moral values is at the worst, and they're the most liberal. So the spirit that now works in the sons of disobedience, he has open access to the Hollywood set, the screenwriters and the actors. So if the enemy wants to have a propaganda machine, Hollywood has been a very effective tool in his hand to prepare not just the United States but the whole world through the so-called entertainment. You know, one person, I don't know who it was Stan Dale or somebody I was visiting, but he said, maybe it's Steve Quayle. He said, if you all you got to do is watch. No, it was Lindsay Williams. You just watch Hollywood. If you want to know what the Illuminists and the New World Order heads are going to do, just watch Hollywood. They will tell you in advance.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I like that one. I find that to be very interesting how Hollywood does portray something, and then all of a sudden it comes to pass. And one of the things that came to mind while you're speaking, and it goes back to the animal-human hybrid thing, is the Island of Dr. Moreau, which was written by, I believe it was H.G. Wells in 1896, I believe it was, and then made into a movie in 77 and then remade in 1996. And then we had Jurassic Park, which took place in 1996. It became it debuted on network TV in 1996, and shortly after that, we were introduced to Dolly the sheep, which was a genetically cloned sheep. So those things do come to mind, you know, when you say watch Hollywood if you want to see what the World Order is up to. Now, these Nephilim hybrids, what do you believe that they are holding positions of power right now, or are they just blended into our society, living like day to day people?
with the purpose of corrupting, I guess you say, the human line, without being spotted. And also, how many of these Nephilim do you believe are actually walking the Earth right now?
The report I have, there are thousands. But as far as where they are positioned, they're not visible in terms of, you know, just, you know, where everyone can see them. I think that they're when, for example, I just was debriefing one of our top bloodline women who was taken on a craft. She reports to the last G20 in Toronto. She's a grand dame. She is reported giving birth to 13. She's one of the first mothers. Her biological father is King George VI, and her biological mother is Queen Elizabeth, which makes it her sister. If you saw her, you'd think she was the twin, only a little slightly younger than Queen Elizabeth, but she was there. And the report was, you know, the top person in our country was there, top leaders from around the world at the G20. And here's the report, that the 13 top leaders of the New World Order are all Nephilim. But they're not reptilian. They're not grays. They are the quintessential. They are the avant-garde of that which would represent Superman, the goal of the German breeding program at Lebensborn. This is what they are. I mean, they're like the Nordic, and and this is the reports that I have since about the latter 70s or early 80s that the world leaders, there's been a coup d'état. They got technology and they got power by collaborating with the powers as in Genesis 6, but they required, and it's a long story, but they required women in order to produce the hybrids. They reached a point when these hybrid entities have taken over, and the report is that those that were once the head of the New World Order, the top 13 families, you know, the Council of 13, as some of them call it, that these 13 are now hybrids, and that the kings of the earth are in complete subjection to them. This is the reports that I have, and this was even confirmed that the last Toronto meeting that. But this takes place at night. I mean, this is not out in the public, so these 13 heads, you're not going to see them in the Oval Office, but you can be sure that the man in the Oval Office answers to these guys. There's no question about it. Because the man in the Oval Office, he's not a hybrid.
I agree that there is a power behind what we perceive to be the power. And I've believed that for a very long time, even before I found out about, the Nephilim and the Fallen Angel agenda. I just always thought it was, you know, somebody else controlling really what was going on in the world. Now, you mentioned these grays, you mentioned the Nordics, and you mentioned the reptilians. For those that don't know, can you explain what they are, and also can you give us your perspective on what you believe they are?
Well, you know, Satan is the little god of this world, and he's not God Almighty. He's not a creator. He can only take that which has been created and manipulated to create his ends. So in order to for this third and final incursion of the alien invasion, as people would call it, which is not alien at all, it's all terrestrial-based phenomenon, both the hybrids as well as the craft. But in order to reach his goal, there had to be a certain amount of experimentation. Okay, and so as part of the process, we might say the mutations would be like the grays, or the mutations would be the reptilians. They use them. They will use them, and some of them may be gigantic, you know. I mean, they can use all that as a part of that which makes up the enemy's agenda. But the goal, as I said, has been reported, is to create that which replaces Homo sapien with Homo noeticus, you know, the new man of the New Age doctrine. So what we see now is the reports is that goal has been attained, and so more and more they've reached the state where there are less and less mutations, that is, of the variety of what's called the alien grays and the reptilian, and that which is Homo noeticus. And that's been the goal, because Antichrist and the false prophet will fit in that category. When they come on the scene, they're not going to be, you know, they're not going to be reptilian or grays. They're going to be like Genesis 6:4. The Nephilim were referred to as the Ha-Givarim, or the Gigantes, that is, the mighty heroes, the champions. You know, the people I've talked with, and one of the girls I worked with years ago, who was daughter of Prince Philip, her mother was Helena Marie Bauer, Rothschild of France. Pretty high profile royal family. She lived in Las Vegas when I was working out there, and she mentioned that Satan has a throne there under Caesar's palace. He moves around, but when there are big events that occur, she would sit on the seat and he would manifest through her. She remembers being taken on a monorail kind of device from Caesar's palace underground to Area 51, and she said it took less than 10 minutes. And of course, if you drive by car to Groom Lake, Nevada, it's over an hour and a half from Las Vegas. And I've been to Vegas many times, so I haven't been out to Groom Lake. But if you do a Google satellite, you can see Area 51 is there, and the government denies it even exists, but you can see it on the Google satellite. Okay. Anyway, she was taken out to Area 51, and she switched into a childhood altar. You know, and her childhood altar was Rachel. She's almost 6 foot tall. She looks just like her father, Prince Philip. But anyway, she said, "Mr. Doug," I says. And she says, you know, people know about Area 51, but she kind of put her hand over her mouth. She was in a six-year-old altar state. She says, have you ever heard of Area 52? I says, well, no. I said, what is that? He says, nobody in Area 51 even knows it's there, but it's below Area 51. And he says, that's all dedicated to the Nephilim project, to the hybrids. So if you think about this, if you have secret military base and where you have these black ops, but you have a layer below that even the people above don't even know, where they can be carrying on this hybrid thing, they can go on with immunity. I mean, if you try to drive out Area 51, there are signs there that they will use deadly force if you cross over into that territory. Okay? So there are many ways in which this is being carried on that even the Congress doesn't even know. There's all kinds of money that is given to black projects that's unaccounted for. I mean, that's in the record. So, you know, if people just do their homework, I would just say, you know, type in Joseph Farrell and Google him in, and Dr. David Jacobs and Google him in, and you're going to have your eyes opened, you know, to a year ago, I wasn't even talking like this, and I've been working with survivors for 25 years, but I didn't even think about the alien UFO stuff, because I just knew it was deception. But now I see that how it all fits in, and that it's really happening. But both the aliens, so-called, are just hybrid, is part of the hybrid program, and the UFOs, where they're not actual visionary or spirit phenomenon, are actual hardware. It's in existence, you know. I mean, it's documented. It's there. And so what's it all about? This is a part of the New World Order, and the whole framework is in the context of bringing an Antichrist.
You know, if you talk about Hollywood, Mr. Riggs, are you familiar with a movie series called Resident Evil, taken from a video game?
I've not seen it, no. I don't know what that is.
What about you, Dante?
Yeah, I've actually seen it. I actually played the video game when it first came out.
You've seen any of the movies? Because what you guys were just talking about completely brings that to mind, how there's this underground base that goes miles and miles underground in a desert, and they're trying to create this thing, and they create this woman that fights, and she's like a hybrid. She looks completely human, but she's superhuman.
Yeah, she's actually part dead. She's part zombie. and part human, which is very weird. This T-virus gets out and affects all humanity and changes them into these zombie-like beings. But she's some kind of hybrid that lives among mankind. And it is interesting that you do bring that up, though. Yeah, I definitely am going to take a closer look at Hollywood ever since you said that, Brother Riggs, about looking at Hollywood to really see what's going on. And I've always held the belief that there may be Christians in Hollywood that are probably trying to get some sort of message out. Do you think that that may be the case also, that some of the stuff we see it comes from someone who, you know, may believe as we do, but is not outspoken in Hollywood like we are? Or do you believe that they are all, I guess you say, behind the conspiracy?
No, there are those there that are Christian, and I don't even remember. I worked with Sigourney Weaver's sister years ago. She has a sister. She's full-blown MPDSRA. In fact, she told me, I don't remember her name now, she's a redhead. She came down from Indiana. And she said her sister, who she referred to Sigourney Weaver, she said she was multiple. You know, I mean, I have no way of knowing. This girl is definitely multiple. But, you know, she told me that a lot of the actors are multiples, but we know that, you know, that there are Christians. Yeah, what's Brad Pitt's wife's name? I forgot her name. That
Angelina Jolie.
Her father is it? Robert? Is it
John Voight?
Yeah,
John Voight. Right.
I don't know that he's a professing Christian, but he's very conservative, and he is very pro, you know, nationalism and you know just conservative at the core. So they have people like that, but you know they're kind of castigated by their own peers. And if anyone makes a stand for Christ, I think they're pretty much ostracized. I never forget an account that I heard from a person that was very wealthy. He was a son of a multimillionaire. He used to this was years ago. He would always host the actors and everything like that. And John Wayne was in there, and there was a bunch of these other guys from Hollywood. And somebody was, you know, making fun of Billy Graham. The Duke said, "You don't make fun of that man around me." I mean, he just stopped him right away. He said, "He's a man of God," and he spoke out. You know, now I think John Wayne had maybe a Catholic background, but I saw a video before his death, and he was on a yacht, and he was this, and he had some friends there, and they were having lunch, and he stopped, and he said, and he prayed, and asked the blessing, and he closed in Jesus' name. I heard him. So here's the interesting thing about the Duke. He produced over 200 movies. They were all G-rated, and they've grossed more than probably the majority of many of the actors in his day. So, I mean, you do have that, and I don't know, I can't speak contemporary because I'm not in that venue, so I can't speak authoritatively, but I believe God has his people hidden everywhere, and I believe he has his ambassadors right there in Hollywood.
I believe just in the music and rock and roll game as well. I really do.
Yeah. No, he has his people placed. The Lord is always ahead of the enemy. No matter where the enemy is, the Lord will always have his agents there in advance operating. So they may not be known to mankind, but they're known to angels and they're known to God. And so, yeah, they're there.
I do want to thank you for coming on. I definitely enjoyed everything that you've shared with us tonight. Tonight has been very insightful, and I believe you are the first guest that has actually talked about, you know, modern-day Nephilim, and I think that is very interesting for everybody who has, you know, studied the passages in Genesis 26, Matthew 24, and all the other passages in the Bible. I think it's very important what you're doing, bringing this to light and really, really putting it out there for people who, you know, keep saying that the Nephilim will return and these days will be like the days of Noah. So I definitely do want to thank you for coming on, and I definitely want to thank you for your research.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on, Dante, and the other gentleman? I don't know you.
Hey, my name is Brother BJ, and I also want to say, Mr. Riggs, that we will be praying for you for the work that you do, because I know you're in a minefield, so keep up the good work and serving the Lord.
Yes, well, thank you. I appreciate that very much.